The Last Jedi is here, and this long-anticipated Star Wars movie will undoubtedly leave a mark on the franchise, and perhaps even filmmaking in general, for a long, long time to come. I'm Frank Ablawi. I'm joined by James, Pete, Pope, Matt, and Al of the Non-Pro Crew, and we're going to discuss this film like only a bunch of geeks on a weeks-long content embargo can. What worked? What didn't? And what does this all mean for the greater saga and the franchise to come? We'll answer it all on this episode of Non-Pro on Film. Now, there's some talk about this being a divisive film among fans, and hear me out, we're not quite buying it. At least I'm not quite buying it. It's hard to know where the line is between so-called fanboy complaints and fawning. But on this show, we're focusing on really digging into the film and honoring every legitimate viewpoint. Before we start talking about whether spaceships are cool or whether Leia surviving was stupid, which is some of the big things people are talking about on the internet, let's talk about the movie in general and what it's about. If you don't know what the movie's about, you really shouldn't be talking about whether or not the movie was good or bad.
Yeah.
What is The Last Jedi about? You can't do this with every Star Wars movie, right? I'm not going to crap on the prequels, but there's a lot of them where there is a message in the film, but it's either like a hammered home message of, I don't guess, trade federations are bad, or one about like love. Love will conquer all. That's pretty that's a iron fist. I think this one was more about storytelling than any of the other Star Wars films. And one of the major themes is, for me, is failure. It's about how doing things badly or doing things wrong can be the only way we move forward.
I'm going to completely agree with you. I feel like failure was a huge part of this because everyone was failing, from the good guys to the bad. No one got out of this without messing up or, like, not even remotely achieving their goal. Almost everybody walked away disappointed. Like, every character sort of didn't quite get what they wanted out of it. And it is true, as you watch that film, like, that was the only way they were ever going to go forward.
I do definitely agree that failure is a big part. But I think another big part of it is the idea of choice. Choosing what you do in the face of failure, or choosing to fail and then deciding what to do after that.
I think this maybe is going to fall on one of the lesser themes lists, but I think this is a Star Wars movie about war, right? And more so than our Star Wars war movie, which was Rogue One. Which ended up being more of a plucky Star Wars movie. You know, I really felt the grit of war, whether it was from the overall message that they brought with the Canto Bright scene to Holdo and Poe's relationship, to Luke's reflecting back on the Clone Wars and the prequels. I really thought the message of war in the Star Wars universe was something that was really importantly underlying this film.
I think another theme played strongly into it, and I think is shaping up to be possibly the main theme of the trilogy, is the idea of personal choice and choosing your own destiny. The fact that fate does not hold sway completely over who you are. You can choose who you want to be. You don't have to be born into some royal bloodline to choose your destiny.
Which I think goes into another big theme they have, which is like, let the past die. Like, that's a huge part of this film, and the theme that it's going with is that it's not necessarily even the characters that don't necessarily let go of the past, they at least accept it and move forward.
I'm glad you gave me that segue, because I think the final overarching theme for this movie, and in fact, for everything Disney is doing with Star Wars, and I'm going to kind of go back and forth from the movie as a thing, as a cultural artifact, and as a production, is that it's an attempt to divorce itself from the original trilogy. It's Star Wars attempting to divorce itself from Star Wars. So the theme is about legacy. In-universe, it's about the purpose and the role of legacy in the world that these characters inhabit. And I think for that reason, if you're seeing people who are upset about this, and whenever you hear anyone use those toxic words of not a true Star Wars fan, they're aiming at that. Both sides are either... Oh, God. Both sides. Yeah, both sides are aiming at that concept. And it's because the movie does it ridiculously. Like, if failure is a really brave, almost unheard of choice for a filmmaker to have their main characters fail at almost everything, if not everything, then having a movie like Star Wars that's about dismantling Star Wars is almost audacious. And I think that's where you're going to get the most amounts of complaints afterwards, which we're about to get into right now.
I'd just like to say that I think there's a different way of looking at the same things that you're saying. I think in a more constructive way, what's happening here is the creators are teaching us how to enjoy Star Wars movies without the Skywalker clan.
That would be the person who enjoyed Last Jedi's viewpoint. The person who doesn't enjoy Last Jedi's viewpoint is the reason you've picked Star Wars as a property to develop is its legacy, and dismantling its legacy, which is what they interpreted the actions as, actually prevents me from enjoying Star Wars moving forward.
I think both points of view are valid.
Let's begin from the beginning, because I think if we describe some of the scenes and some of the activities that happened in the film, it's not going to be a recap, really, but as we bring it up, we could talk about all those themes we just brought up. So I think first on our list is the Poe Holdo storyline. This is Poe Dameron facing off against
Vice Admiral Holdo.
In the rebellion.
First thing I thought of when this thing went down was I'm back to watching our Battlestar Galactica rewatch. I think it very fits into what James was saying about how this is very much about war and like how war warps and affects the minds, hearts, and views of people. And like you can see how the stress of this chase and all in this fighting really kind of manipulated decisions, and not say making the wrong decisions. And I know there's a lot of controversy about whether Holdo should have shared her plan with Poe. But I'm going to go with the view that she didn't owe him anything. He was just demoted at the beginning of the film. So he's just like a low-ranking soldier to her.
Yeah, I mean, it really, I think, and again, if we're going to go back to this dismantling Star Wars and its legacy theme, I think it specifically is tackling one of those ideas. We're used to these characters in Star Wars who are just these young male characters who get away with everything by running off and kind of just thinking they're the best and, you know, they know what's going on and they come in and they mansplain and they, you know, they do all these things, right? They're these plucky flyboy heroes. And I think that that's one of the things they're trying to deconstruct here.
I think we tend to, and this is maybe the role of Star Wars as a cultural landmark, because, I mean, who are the plucky jerks who never paid attention and mansplained in the original trilogy? Well, we've got Luke was a little whiny in meetings. Maybe he shouldn't have spoken up as an intern in New Hope. But then there's really just going to be Han, who keeps wanting to leave.
Yeah,
Han is a runaway. You know, he's a little Finn-like, a little Poe-like. So maybe, but I think for a broader point, I don't think it's Star Wars' fault necessarily, but it is genre fiction in general, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah. science fiction in general.
You've got the plucky young hero who knows more than the elites. I think it's a very good argument to make whether or not Holdo was in the wrong. Technically, she was, right? She did her actions by not letting in her people on the full extent of the plan did result in a snowball that caused a lot of lives to be lost.
Agreed.
Also, technically, she was completely right in that she didn't have to do that. And also, the film puts effort into establishing why she wouldn't. Like, Poe screws up in the first volley, in that first scene, that awesome scene with the bombings and what have you, which we can just go into the detail. So, like, it's, to me, that is a point of contention on, that's a good argument to be having after watching a movie, of whether or not the elite in the military are right or wrong. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's Star Wars, but it's cool.
I think it's definitely pretty cool, but like I can see why every single person would complain about what she should have told him, because it does feel like a very basic conversation you would have. And I understand and accept that it happened purely for plot convenience, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, but I feel like here Poe is taking on the role of the viewer,
in that you want to know what's going on and you're angry and you just want her to say something and you can really understand where he's coming from. But at the same time, we go back military ranks and so on and so forth.
And plus, they don't know how people are tracing them in the war. Maybe there's a spy amongst them. There's a lot of stuff in universe you could use. That's why I'm not sure if it's quite a contrivance. I can understand it. I totally get it. But at least give credit where it's due. The film makes an attempt with that first devastating battle between the rebellion and the First Order, that stakes are now higher and things are bad.
Can I also say, like, that was a great opening scene. Like, the lost life in that scene, you feel it. You feel the fact that those people are just dying, and, like, it's... I don't know, it really does set the tone for them.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. When the rebels lose in this film, you feel it. Just to wrap up Poe, I believe when he gets his mansplaining stun chart, I think we can't ignore the fact that the audience went wild.
That was a great scene. It's like, Leia!
And I really love that she used the like the same style blaster from the original movie.
He was, a great he was the Leia of New Hope.
I mean, at that Pratt point, it had just gone so far from where, you know?
Yeah, he was in full rebellion mode. He was, mutiny rebellion. Yeah. It's complicated. Yeah. Now that sets up a rather dramatic scene. The circling of the wagons. There's a word for it in filmmaking where I'm not looking for a MacGuffin. It's the thing that pulls us through the entire narrative. This is what I'm calling the long distance chase, right? The First Order is chasing the last remnants of the rebellion. It is, to use a space western thing, that's the long journey where the enemies are all around you. And I feel like it is another brave choice to have a slow speed chase in the middle of your space saga.
I mean, we feel like it's slow speed. They're probably going like hundreds of thousands of miles an hour.
Thanks a lot, Einstein. All right.
Relativity.
It was very much, I would want to say almost like a Lucas-style decision to call back to like a World War II movie. Where if like a, almost
two
like a
submarines
sub, like a submarine movie where you like you have the one sub trying to avoid the enemy fleet that's trying to hunt him down. And it's this very tense, very uncertain kind of feeling where, like, you're in the coldest space and, like, you have mutiny all around and tensions are flaring just because, like, you're in this combat zone and no one knows what's going to happen.
Thematically, it does make sense. I'm going to throw a bone to the people who had problems with this. Not the people who are like, well, why didn't the First Order hyperdrive there since you could do that infinitely because you have all the fuel? Like, I don't care about that stuff as much, but I will say that in a film that runs at 2.5 hours and where there's a lot of failure points in this movie, there's a lot of points where our heroes don't accomplish what they set out to accomplish. I get it. It's part of the theme of the film, but it kind of makes things... Like, I don't, I understand somebody who would have problems with that, who said that this was way more dull than I would have expected.
Am I hearing you right? You're thinking that in a movie that's already 2.5 hours long, to introduce a plot element that makes you feel time at an slowed down pace can be questioned.
One thing I will say from recently rewatching The Force Awakens, the J.J. Abrams pacing in The Force Awakens is something that just really works. And it's, I don't think this movie has poor pacing, but comparing it to that, or maybe even some of the other Star Wars movies, it just doesn't pace as well.
And I think that's part of the point. It goes back to the deconstructing Star Wars, the turning your expectations around. You're expecting the fast-paced Star Wars feel, but it's showing you Star Wars can also be something else.
Right. I'm not sure I like what that something else is necessarily. And I want to kind of bring it up whenever it comes up so we're not just spending 20 minutes of me saying no. But like, this is one of those examples. I'm okay with it, but I could definitely see someone saying, James, you first mentioned the war theme. And Matt, when you mentioned Battlestar Galactica, I'm like, I didn't want that in Star Wars. Get your Battlestar out of my Star Wars. Get your, get your wars out of my Star Wars. But
it's chocolate and avocado. It doesn't go well together.
I see that it makes sense. I see that people who play the video games, and a lot of this is going to be generational, which maybe we'll talk about in a little while, but like for me it was like, I could do a little less of that,
I guess. I'll touch on your generational thing really quickly. I mean, for me, I just have so much experience with Star Wars being so many things, you know, like I've read the Rogue Squadron novels and played these games, and they've bent with that genre, so that was one of the things I was excited for when Disney took over. That being said, you know, this appearing in the main line franchise is what I think has people concerned.
I definitely want to discuss that in more detail at the end once we bring up all the elements to say how much of this is what kind of person, what kind of viewer you are. This leads directly into one of the more controversial scenes in the film when the rebels' main ship gets attacked. And we have the leadership of the rebellion is cast out into space and killed, with the exception of Leia, who is cast out into space, seemingly killed, but then something mysterious happens. We have to talk about the elephant in the room, the mysteriousness.
I guess, so Leia saves herself using the Force, or is it an unconscious effort by the Force? Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't have a problem with this concept, the idea that Leia as a Skywalker, as a person in this universe, as I think the movie likes to show, is connected with the Force in some way. I just thought it looked gosh darn stupid.
Yeah, I'm with you. I hear the complaints, the species of complaint that is, how can she do this? It doesn't, for whatever reason, never tickles my button of this bothers me. For me, it was just the optics of it. It looked strange. I wasn't sure what they were trying to point out. Her being strong with the Force has literally been established for decades, in a way. So I'm fine with the concept and the mysteriousness of it. I just feel weird about the way it looked.
I think also, like, I can see where some of the disconnect comes from, and this is maybe a disconnect between the direction styles and aesthetic choices of JJ as compared to Johnson. JJ really makes a point to bring home Leia as the general. When we see Leia in The Force Awakens, she is in this kind of rough and tumble gear. She's ready to fight with a blaster. You know, like, that's the sort of Leia they're presenting, right? Who's not this kind of Leia that we imagine as the Force user. When we come back in Rian Johnson's film, she's more regal. She has her hair up. She's kind of throwing back to some of that princess garb. And that to me, I think, speaks more to the Jedi roots, right? So I think that maybe even is a stylistic choice that they're trying to push you in a direction or another.
And not to forget, she's a woman that just lost her ex-husband, who she still deeply loved.
She could be in mourning.
She's in a very different place than when we first met her in The Force Awakens.
Well, yeah, she's also being attacked by her son. I did not pick up on any of that, James, but that's an interesting reading of it. I just feel like it was jarring in the same way that I would say that the time of the slow speed chase was kind of off-putting. There was something weird about the Leia scene.
I don't know. I think I can really understand that. But also when I was watching it, I was jazzed. I was all about it. I was like, she's flying through the air, like, in space, like, yeah, Carrie, like, I have freaking super Jedi powers. I'm all about this. Like,
I'm with you. I actually enjoyed it.
I didn't think it looked bad, though. I didn't think it looked stupid.
Mm. One problem I had with the scene was unfortunately tied to Carrie Fisher's untimely death. I got the feeling that this scene was mostly played for the shock value, if you will. Everybody expects, oh no, Leia's dead. Mm-hmm. But surprise, she pulls herself back in. It was a twist that was played, and I think even if it was planned before her death, it felt a little too on the nose, like almost like they were playing her death for the shock value.
Yeah, I wouldn't quite go that far, but I get it. I get the uncomfortableness. It's just that was related
weird
to that
feeling in the back of your head.
Uh-huh. I guess I could see that. I highly doubt that was intentional at all.
I agree. But I mean, I'm like, not accusing anybody of anything.
Like my take on it, I think point of it was to mostly for Kylo. Like, he knows his mom's on that bridge, and he sees his wingmen just blow it up.
Yeah.
And you kind of get that, like, shot of him just kind of like
staring. He
almost did it himself.
He had that great moment of that, you know, but he we're almost forgetting. He did choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I still have hope for Kylo, but we'll get into that later.
Oh, man. There's a lot to get in there. There's a lot of layers to this. I think it served a very strong narrative purpose for the people who said, well, if you're going to lose anybody in this film, why not lose Carrie Fisher's character? I feel like they're not getting the broader narrative purpose of the story, to be blunt. And I think there is a lot of strength in having Leia as a Force user. And I really hope it's sort of, no, she wasn't trained. It's just, this Force should have a more mystical role than just be like Jedi, like Academy stuff and midichlorians, you know? That's my feeling.
And I think that's something that this movie continues to try and address. And I'm sure we'll get to it.
So let's talk about the squid in the room.
Or, you know, not in the room, as the case may be.
So one of the things that will haunt me to the day I die. One of the things that comes up and I almost want to bring it up at the end just because it's like an overwhelming feeling, is the little places where the legacy is kind of discarded. For example, Admiral Akbar's death. He didn't die off camera, but he just sort of like, it just happened. Almost no one acknowledges it. It's just a line in passing. It seems a little bit of a shame.
This is going to sound weird as a person that has absorbed all the expanding universe and knows all about Admiral Akbar. His death wasn't really important.
Oh,
it was just,
really?
It was just, I mean, it, yeah, he's a legacy character and might be seen as killing off the old guard, yeah. But in the end, he was a minor character.
This is what's fascinating about Star Wars, is you are absolutely right to say he's a minor character who's famous for one amazing line in a third movie that became an amazing meme. But that's so Star Wars.
Our shields can't repel. Oh, different line. Sorry.
to not, you know, like, that's one of the things, like, I guess to jump back to George, you know, that's one of the things, like, I guess the prequels knew,
yeah,
you know, and acknowledged and hone in on. And even The Force Awakens, there are so many like, moments like Star
there
Wars.
There is a stronger love for the source material.
Star Wars is just a little bit about acknowledging that fan base, even with how ridiculous they get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the Fed effect that a guy has one little thing and people talk about it forever. Like the guy with the flip-out electric axe, the stormtrooper from Force Awakens.
Right.
There's always one character like that for Dan's
movie boring.
That you love.
So, yeah, I can't believe Admiral Akbar is going to be the pivot point for us to talk about this. But yes, there is. This is exactly what I was talking about the nature of legacy in this film. Admiral Akbar was not a super important character. I wonder how much hate mail I'm going to get about this. He's not a super important character. Didn't really matter much for the larger saga, but he was a character in the larger saga. And my question to all of you is, what was accomplished by having him die off screen? Maybe that it was like, oh, well, all the leadership of the rebellion died and I know one of their names. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe that does have value, but does that value weigh more than the satisfaction of the fans you are allegedly making the film for?
I think the idea is you know his name. I think that's a perfectly valid reason, because otherwise you don't know anybody else in the Resistance leadership. Holy crap, Admiral Akbar's gone. The Resistance is a lot worse off.
You just pointed out something to me that solved a problem for me, because I was trying to figure out, okay, what if we left him alive? Did we have to kill him off there? And yes, we did. Because if you don't kill him off, if Akbar is still out there, why doesn't he come and save him? You know, you need to have him on the bridge there. That's what happens in the heat of battle. Mm. It's a slow speed chase, but it's still a chase. They have to keep going. Did we need to bring the chase and the movie to a screeching halt and have a Spock-esque funeral for him where we torpedo him out the ship?
Yes.
We launch him at the dreadnought.
I would have loved to amazing. Do that.
20-minute deleted scene.
Actually, yes. Put him in a proton torpedo, right? Yeah. It's a trap on it and just
in
shoot
front
it
of
at
Coco.
The dreadnought.
Would have been great.
It's a 20-minute thing in front of Coco.
There was no
people
time.
Will see it. All right. I get it. I totally do get it. And I, like I'm saying, there is some value in giving a name to one of these anonymous leaders who died. Like, I don't know anybody in Force Awakens when that galaxy or system died. Everybody died.
Yeah,
I'm like, who are those
apparently
people?
It was all the entire New Republic.
Yeah, I had no idea. But I still feel like Akbar, like, to be honest, I have to keep remembering he died. It's a weird gray area where it's like, oh, I get that. If it had more impact, and that could come down to filmmaking. Hmm. There's a way of showing me, case in point, Transformers the movie. I remember when corpses were dragged in front of the screen as a child. I was like, I know the guy, he's dead. He's dead and he died and nothing happened. Like, I get it. So maybe Johnson has to go back and watch some Transformers the movie. Give me the big hole in Akbar's chest, for love of God.
I'll just like to point out that I'm assuming that General Madeen was killed in that attack too, and they didn't even mention him.
Gonna say
that was the general beard that coordinated dude. Beard dude from the Death Star attack.
Yeah,
interesting. This is where Finn meets Rose, and they go off on their ridiculously half-baked quest on the behest of Poe to do something in Monte Carlo, in space. Mm-hmm. Monte Carlo, I guess.
Mm. Yes,
this is one of the big failure points of the movie for many people.
I hate Canto Bight.
Do you?
I want to like it because I think Canto Bight as a whole represents something really interesting in the Star Wars universe, something that I actually like even though it's not something that Star Wars focuses on, that there exists this gray area. And it exists in canon, in canon extra content and things like that, but it's never really addressed in mainline movies, but I think it's cool that this one does it. But it just takes a level a little too far. It's a little too campy for me. It just doesn't feel right. In a movie that is already long, it makes it longer. And on top of that, in a movie that has tons of great practical effects and tons of great CG, their escape on the, I don't know what the creatures are called, but they kind of look like hairless cat horses.
That's what they're
named. That's the canon name.
Looks awful. It looks awful. And in a movie that I think looks amazing otherwise.
You're supposed to hate it. Like, you're absolutely supposed to hate it. Johnson is making you want to hate that. Like, he makes you feel uncomfortable with everything about it. Like, look at, like, the introduction of Benicio Del Toro.
DJ.
Like, exactly. You hate him. Like, you don't want to like him. There's nothing in the movie that makes you want to like him. There's nothing about that planet you're supposed to want to like, except maybe the fact that you can feel for the children.
I totally understand the point you're trying to make here and what Johnson tried to do, but I don't think it's the same. So
it's a different kind of hate.
Yeah,
that's in your
you're going to bring up DJ, and I think DJ's right. I inherently like DJ as a character, but I inherently distrust him in universe reasons when I meet him for a lot of things. Right? I don't come to Canto Bright and automatically dislike it because, you know, I think it's full of scum and villainy. I think we're supposed to be like Finn. Oh man, look at this place! It looks so cool. It looks so much fun. I think it doesn't. I don't like it. It unsettles me because it just doesn't work. It just doesn't feel like it fits in Star Wars to me. It feels like an Indiana Jones, which, I mean, I guess feels like Lucas, but you get the point.
I loved Canto Bright. I love the fake out where you, like, from the way Rose describes it, you think it's going to be Mos Eisley again, but then it's all completely opposite. Instead of, like, Dirt Town Cantina, it's Space Mars Largo, which I think is absolutely the point. And yeah, you see, like, how disgusting space capitalism is.
Yeah, I'm with Matt entirely on this. I was so surprised when Pope said, like, you're supposed to dislike it. I'm like, really? Because I walked in and they're like, I was told I was going to hate this. Like, oh, there's going to be this whole backlog thing with Finn going to his place. You're not going to like it. I'm like, okay. And I walked in, I'm like, no, this is great. I know what you're talking about. This is fantastic.
To clarify, I think there are two things going on here. I didn't want it to go too much further. There's James' point of, I dislike the way it looked, and there's another one of, you're supposed to dislike these characters as being negative. Those are two different points.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
something completely different. For example, Jabba's Palace. Like, that's disgusting. Everything there, I hate them. Oh my god, the slave owners and the dance sequence of slaves. It's very creepy. But at the same time, it looked cool, I liked it, I enjoyed it. I think that's what James is trying to get at this.
There's things you're supposed to hate, and there's things that you just hate.
So let's be clearer on what we're the other person's saying. From my take on this, as I'm with you, James, I feel like this was a weird addition. It was another pacing issue. I don't think it was bad. I do think it was a little heavy-handed. I think it was a little heavy-handed on the whole space capitalism. It wasn't Trade Federations, but it went close. It's a little too close for me, whereas I think outside of the original trilogy, which was very vague in the concept of what's good and what's evil, and even like what a Jedi is, and never mentioning Sith, there weren't these absolute things. There's a reason why you could use so much from the original trilogy in like your everyday life as advice and stuff, because it wasn't like I'm not going to casually bring up Star Wars references the next time a budget bill passes, but now I feel like I can. Yay, I guess. I'm not quite sold on it.
I will also say another thing that I like from that world, and while I agree with some of the things that Frank just said, I do like Del Toro's character and his sort of take on it as we go in the adventure with, and he's brought along. He's not a major character in the thing, obviously, but I definitely enjoy his presence. I enjoy his take on the sort of like, hey, you think these guys are the good guys, these guys are the bad guys? All right, wow, that's really like, that's not reality. And again, I think he's a welcome part of this film, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like DJ. I like Finn and Rose's dynamic through Canto Bright. I think it's good to have Finn go off with Rose as compared to, say, adventuring with Poe, because their worldviews are different and they challenge each other, right? That's how the story progresses and that's how these characters grow.
Finn and Rose are an interesting dynamic. Let's talk a little bit about that.
I enjoy their chemistry quite a lot. I think they work very well, not necessarily the same way that Poe and Finn worked, but at least a similar enough relationship.
It was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. When Finn wants to go sacrifice himself by like driving straight into the battering ram and she comes in and rams him out of the way, I thought that worked very, very well because it is true. Like they need it at that point to stop sacrificing themselves and like, hey, this isn't how we're going to win. And I like what she says to him. And I do like the idea that she does become enamored with him. And she kisses him, and he has nothing back. And I liked that. I liked that he had nothing back to give her. I felt that was appropriate. Like, not every romance is going to be reciprocated.
I think you sneakily threw in a defense against my complaint by saying that there was nothing back. This is, as far as we know, a potential love story. At least one character is in love with another, and I loathed it. I thought it was completely ridiculously tacked on. Not every relationship has to be romantic, and it bothered me that they Disney-fied it.
Yeah, well, not every romantic Kindle is really going to go off.
Luke and Leia.
But, you know...
good point.
The thing is, I thought they played fun foils for one another because, you know, you had Rose kind of like a war-torn orphan who really, like, had a rough lot in life. Things kind of messed with her all throughout. And she kind of, like, grounded Finn a lot. And because, you know, he was an orphan that went straight into be a stormtrooper. So all he knew was being a stormtrooper. So really, she's rounding him out in a wonderful way that kind of helps him grow as a character.
Yeah, as much as I don't like the romantic implications of that relationship necessarily at this point, I did love, like Hal said, I like the whole we have to save each other thing. I think it's a good concept. I think it's a good line between, because there's always going to be people who say, well, either side of the battle is at fault. But like, no, clearly they're jerks. They're bad guys. They're bad guys in this. I think that's cool. And I do really like the dynamic. And I like that Star Wars brings up slavery in a way. Because it kind of came, you know, it's happened in the prequels, and it's this sort of hangnail. We haven't addressed it anyway, and there are some amazing payoffs for this later in the film.
I just think it's hard to introduce a new character that's going to be a lasting character, like Rose is clearly going to be, and I think Johnson does it really well in this film.
All right, so there's two more major elements in this part of the movie that we should really bring up. One is Holdo. Holdo as a new character, just like Rose. Holdo, I think, is a pretty strong character. There are times that I was thinking, why isn't this one of the other characters we haven't seen development from yet? Why isn't this Leia? But there are times also where I feel like having a new character has a lot of value, right? Because we don't know who she is.
Right.
First of all, her plan that she mysteriously, maybe not mysteriously, kept hidden from Poe. The idea of keep outrunning the First Order and then leave all the rebellion in cloaked ships on a old rebel base. Is this a good plan? And is there a problem with her not telling Poe?
It's a plan. I think the problem with her telling Poe is that if Poe had probably known that plan, he might have not have sent Finn and Rose off to do his gambit. Maybe.
I'm going to disagree. And I'll say you saw how he reacted when he found out. I don't think being told earlier would have changed that. He would have been all for, no, we got to stay with the ship. We need our capital ships. We need our symbol. I think she felt he didn't see the importance of keeping the lives and not the symbol.
From a film perspective, the fact that Holdo's plan was a secret from Poe obviously was, it's a big narrative pull, right? That secret to Poe means that Poe is somewhat justified or has a reason for sending Finn and Rose out to do their gambit. Their gambit fails miserably, right? They do not get the right person. They get somebody else who ultimately betrays the rebellion, makes things infinitely worse for everyone. Holdo's plan, in a way, also, whether or not it made sense in universe, did make things worse for everyone. There was a lot of things that happened at this stage of the movie. This is our heroes are in dire straits. So what impact does that have on you as a viewer? Are you excited by this? Is this an Empire Strikes Back moment where you're like, oh my God, this is the, I can't think of the writing term for it, but the moment before the end of the horrible act?
So I have a really interesting perspective on this. I'm not going to say I disliked this plan in this section of the movie the first time around. I liked it. It plays, to me, really well the second time around. So I came back, I saw the movie again before we were going to have this talk, and I actually really liked knowing Holdo's plan going in, which, I mean, I guess what does that say about knowing the plan?
Tell people your plan now.
But as compared to the rest of the movie that has, I'm not going to call them fake outs, but a lot of surprises that the tension breaks really quickly that maybe don't not hold up, but this was one of the things that I thought on rewatch, for whatever reason, played really well.
I was convinced Holdo was a spy. Like, yeah. I was convinced Holdo was the reason they were tracking through hyperspace. That was what I was thinking, and I kind of like that it subverted my expectations on that, but I think it plays into what we were talking about before. This is all about failure. Poe's plan fails, and so does hers. Neither one of their plans was going to work, and they didn't.
And how did that make you feel, though?
Awesome. Made me feel awesome.
You enjoyed
that. I loved that it was like, no, both of you idiots were wrong, and you shouldn't have done either of the things you did.
So this is the reason why Admiral Akbar couldn't be the one to enact this plan, and they had to have Holdo. Because if you have somebody that is a known character, that has a fan base, that people already trust, you don't get that tension between Poe and Holdo. And I'm with Al, where I kind of thought maybe she's a traitor. Maybe she's an unknown factor. But then you find out that, like, no, she was actually pretty trustworthy. And I almost kind of felt, like, ashamed. Just like, wow, why did I assume she was going to be a bad guy? Because part of me assumed Poe's the good guy. He's the hotshot hero. He's supposed to know what's going to go on in the big space battle.
You assume she's a bad guy because she's screaming at the good guy and acting like a bad guy.
I don't know.
From a certain point of view that we're kind of channeled into watching.
Yeah, that's from. I mean, there, you are definitely led to believe there was something fishy with her.
Yeah,
and that's because she was acting in a particular way that could have been fishy.
I like that it's turned around, and later we learn that everything we interpreted one way was actually the opposite. Classic storytelling, but good.
And the only reason she really fails though is because of the introduction of Benicio del Toro's
DJ.
Character, DJ. Mm. So, I mean, the only reason she really fails is because of the Poe gambit, because they bring him in, and then they give away the fact that they're all running away to that little planet.
Oh, so like, our main characters cause the failure, but how does that make you feel?
Oh, again, wonderful. Like, this is, like, it's awesome seeing them fail, and then, like, slightly triumph out of, you know, the ashes a little bit.
I mean, people are bringing up, it's like, this isn't Star Wars, why is there all this failure? But, I mean, if you think about Empire Strikes Back, everybody fails in Empire Strikes Back. Luke fails his training. Falcon escape. That was a failure. They almost get like blown up in the asteroid field. Then they try to find a way, but guess what? They get betrayed and their plan fails. And they fail again trying to save Han. And so it's all failures after failure. So, I mean, like, it's, people are saying like this is such a subversion, but I mean, it's almost a callback.
Yeah, Revenge of the Sith too.
That's true. Yeah. Revenge of the Sith was all failures.
Except for the bad guys.
This is a part of the hero's journey storytelling mechanic. We're in the second act of the film. This is the part of the film where our heroes are challenged, they suffer a loss, and have to regroup. You know what I mean? That is just classic hero's journey storytelling, and Star Wars hasn't abandoned that yet.
Mm-hmm.
God, I hope they have.
Well, that's actually a very good point, because as much as I'm enjoying hearing all your thoughts about this, I guarantee you, you're all going to do a 180 in the next half. Because as much as I'm hearing, well, this is just what Empire is, I've heard people talking out of both sides of their mouth for a week now, at least. It's, well, this movie subverted all our expectations, except for the ones we expected. And then also, it is nothing like anything you've ever seen before, but it's just like Empire. It's anything you want it to be for any given moment, any position you want to take at that given moment. And I feel like the real answer is not quite that easy. But more when we return.
Luke Skywalker was just a farm boy until he received a mysterious message.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
To rescue a beautiful princess.
I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm here to rescue you.
You're too short for a stormtrooper.
And defend the forces of freedom against the Death Star.
Here it comes.
The winner of 7 Academy Awards. The legendary Star Wars, rated PG, starts Friday at a theater near you.
Back to our Last Jedi conversation, and things are getting a little heated in that...
Frank, is this where we get to complain about the fact that they didn't call the black BB-8 unit BB-8?
That was its production name.
Yeah, but not its real name.
Oh, man. Wait, I wish he had more to do. It was so good. All right, yeah. Now, this part of the story, we're going to talk about the major, really, the arguably the crux of the story, this is going to be Kylo Ren, Rey, and Luke, and all the things that associate with those guys and those characters. A big thing out of Force Awakens was, who is Rey? Who is this mysterious character that some consider just fallen out of the sky with special powers? And this movie answers the question. Rey is no one in particular. That's the writ of the film. That's what it says. That's what we were led to believe, that she's no one in particular. What do you feel about that?
I think it was the absolutely best choice you can make.
Furious, really. Like that's one of those things that made me mad, because why wouldn't you connect it to the past?
Get rid of all of J.J. Abrams' mystery boxes. I love this, and I love the context of it in Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
I wish that Rey had been somebody important. Like, maybe she also wishes that. However, it's an acceptable choice. I just don't like the way it was revealed. Because it comes from an unreliable narrator.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
It's Kylo Ren is the one who says it, and he has every reason to either tell the truth or to lie. You can make the argument both ways.
I'll argue that it was done very well. I think the scene in the cave leads up to it, because there's that whole scene of her with the mirrors and her walking up and being like, who are my parents? And you just get a reflection of herself. And it's like, no, like, that's it. That's all you've got, hon. You don't got nobody else.
She birthed herself through medical.
No, that's not what I mean. And I don't think it, and it doesn't come from Kylo. She says it.
Yeah, I think
she says they weren't anybody.
She searched her feelings.
Yeah,
the details were supplied by Kylo. I think, and I'm not sure about this, and this is just me, my opinion. I believe that the people out there who are still thinking there might be something coming are the diehard Star Wars fans who have been led to believe that there's always a purpose behind stuff. Now, I want to talk a little bit, just very quickly, about J.J. Abrams. I do not think it's fair to say this is a mystery box. Stop it with the J.J. Abrams stuff. This is a Star Wars staple. Everybody left Force Awakens, or not everyone, not all fans, left Star Awakens thinking that, well, who's Rey? I personally, my feelings, I haven't gotten a chance to say it, I like that she was not anything in the canon. I liked that she was divorced from the rest of the world. I will say that I'm interested to hear the people who had problems with the way it was revealed to us.
I feel like this was Johnson really just going, you're focusing on the wrong thing, because there's like multiple points in the movie where he just goes, you're focusing in the wrong part, it doesn't matter, bang.
There's a little misdirection stuff that goes on in this film, yeah.
I agree with that. I have a problem with all of the red herrings we were thrown, the reactions of Han and Leia when the girl, even if it doesn't turn out to be Rey, I hope there's a girl. There's like a chosen one, like a rancorator.
Things just got dark in this podcast. My point is that, and this is, I love this as a softball. I love when a podcast comes together. So this is an example, a very mute example, of how the film disrespects, and that could be a good thing or a bad thing, the legacy, right? It deconstructs the legacy. In this case, it's just one movie back, right? One movie back, Rey was kind of something special. The way that they have special characters in Star Wars, which I think is maybe problematic. But they have special characters. Rey is special. This is brought up to you, and the film pushes it off. It's not the most egregious example of this. It's probably not even the first. In my opinion, the first example is the tossing of the lightsaber. I actually do want to go into that so we could bring up Luke. That one scene, and we'll talk about humor in this movie in general. Humor, there's a lot more of it in this film than I think of most Star Wars films. I think the humor is more typically more broad than most Star Wars films, right? Some of it even gets cartoony, including having a bearded Mark Hamill tossing the lightsaber over his shoulder. And in a way, and it was an amusing line. It was seen. It was kind of funny. The people next to me were laughing, right? I walked out. I thought in that moment, Force Awakens, the passionate, powerful scene that ended, that made some people tear up when Rey gives Luke the lightsaber, was literally tossed out like a joke. It was a joke. I think that is all over this movie. There's lots of scenes in it, especially when we deal with these legacy characters, namely Luke, and all the big major Force Awakens plot points that were brought up and maybe not handled in this film.
Frank, I'd just like to take a little bit of issue. I think that that's an absolutely valid character choice as far as the act of Luke grabbing that lightsaber and just tossing it away. I think that absolutely 100% works for his character, where his character is at that moment in time. The comedy was played up in there, and that is somewhat questionable.
Well, that's what my point is. It was the humor that was the problem. It wasn't like, it wasn't him rejecting this lightsaber. It was the fact that it was done with a joke. And also, in a bigger point, that it was dismissive of a plot point brought up in the previous movie, similar to Rey's parents.
So I guess this is something like not only I struggled with in this film, but I guess going forward or just hearing when they were doing more Star Wars, first on a level with the old characters, I mean, it kind of underwrites the story we've already seen from these characters. If the story continues directly with them, they don't really get their happy endings. There has to be some sort of drama or tension. Then on top of that, you know, we break down Luke in a really strong way in this film, you know, really taking him far from where he was in Return of the Jedi. And then on top of that, we did that again with the already existing new characters just from JJ's film. And I'm mixed on some of it. I like Luke's overall story and what they're presenting. And I think it reframes and contextualizes some things in Star Wars that even George Lucas tried to do. One of my favorite interpretations of the prequels is the idea that the Jedi were arrogant and they let this thing happen from under their noses. And I think George Lucas even tries to do that in Revenge of the Sith and just can't. But it's tough seeing your heroes in a light you don't like.
Yeah, it's tough seeing them constantly deconstructed. I have some arguments about whether or not they were well deconstructed.
This is going to sound weird to me, but I feel like most of the things that I don't like about Last Jedi come from Force Awakens. Like, and it pollutes Force Awakens in my mind, because I look back at Force Awakens and I look back at some of the things that it set up, and it's not that I dislike the things that Last Jedi did with them. I actually look back on that movie and I think
you didn't like what you expected because of it, right?
Yeah, I look back and I'm like, wait a minute, I don't want to know this. I never did, but you made me think it was important, movie, and now I'm mad at you.
This was so refreshing because, first off, it showed that anybody can be a hero, anybody can have a destiny. You don't have to, I really hope they don't like double back in the third movie and say Rey was actually somebody important, because that would be completely disappointing. I do like that she is a relative unknown. She's able to carve her own way, not because she has the DNA.
But why do we care? Like, why do we care that she's just plucked out of nowhere? Like, I get that that's like an audience thing.
No,
I get what we're saying. Like, I get where it comes from. Like, I get what it's doing. But why should we care? Because this is the Skywalker saga.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you're like, but we've gone into this because of the Skywalker saga, so we have to continue it.
I do feel like we are continuing the Skywalker saga. I think we absolutely are. It's just the Skywalkers are the villains. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Ben Solo being the bad guy and the newcomer having to come up and be like, I gotta knock this guy off his peg.
Interesting.
And of some of the things that I think worked out of this stuff, I liked the Kylo Ren stuff. From the moment we start with Kylo Ren and Snoke tells him, take off that ridiculous helmet. And that's another thing they're pulling away from The Force Awakens. But that I liked because I think the character evolution works here. We're taking him from being a Darth Vader fanboy into a real villain. He smashes that helmet. He establishes a connection with Rey. He starts his own story.
Absolutely. I'm one of those people who left The Force Awakens thinking that Rey's parentage was not a question I had. I never thought that she was someone special. In fact, I loathed when anybody brought up whether Rey was somebody or Snoke was somebody. So the fact that this film said, no, it's not important. It doesn't matter. The Force is within all of us. I absolutely loved it. The interesting thing about Ben and the Skywalkers being villains in this, I am a little bit more hesitant. I mean, I like the concept of Kylo, and we'll talk about him in a minute. But I don't know about the whole flipping the script on all the Skywalkers. I do feel like there definitely is a need to divorce this future franchise with the rest of the original trilogy and the saga, which we will discuss later in this podcast.
See, one of the things that infuriated other people, which I loved, the establishment of Kylo Ren as like a full Sith now because he killed his master. That cemented him as like the evil. Like, I don't think there's redemption after that. And I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, he can still be good. And I'm like, No, he's gone. He's completely gone, and I love that.
I love that there are so many different interpretations of the same thing that happened, right? Because this is similar to the whole, well, maybe there's a secret that Ren was concealing from Rey. Because for me, it was like, no, he's burying the Sith. He's burying the Jedi. This is just a... And the Sith were always weird to me. I never understood the mythology of how it worked. It's like it all happened off screen.
I feel like people are going to try to say, oh, he can be redeemed. I mean... I think at this point you don't need him to be redeemed, and like he killed Snoke, and I do like that he's taken the force in direction that isn't the Sith, because the Sith have been done, and it's really honestly pretty silly. But I like his idea of, damn it all, let's start over from zero and do our own thing.
I'm going to take the opposite point of view on that one, because I always like to see a redemption story. That's just a personal opinion of mine. Mm-hmm. But I think Kylo Ren's particularly important because I always thought that Darth Vader's redemption at the end of Jedi was cheap. He had one moment where he made one correct decision and all of a sudden he gets to come back as a Jedi ghost. Kylo, we've seen an ongoing conflict inside him. It's a major plot point for him. Mm. And I think it's a very important thing. I really hope that he completes that transition in the ninth movie, because it's important to show, I think, that it's never too late. No matter what you've done wrong, if you turn and atone for it, as long as you're continuing down that road, that you can be redeemed.
I actually straight up thought he was going to face turn. I genuinely bought it when he killed Snoke that he was going to face turn. I kind of was all right with it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't totally sold on it. I was all right. And it was interesting.
Yeah, I almost thought we were going to get a double turn on that one with Rey going dark.
And I agree with Matt. I also really like his burn it all. It doesn't matter anymore. Let you come by my side. We'll rule fairly and just get rid of everything. Let's end the conflict. I liked all that. I hated he killed Snoke. It absolutely infuriated me in a way that I cannot express here. And like, it is, you can say that like, oh, he's getting rid of the past, but like, Snoke was not part of the past. If anything, Ben's part of the past. All right? He's connected to all the crap in the past.
One movie not ago Snoke. Was a past, Johnson.
You're the one who's obsessed Snoke with is your the new character.
I didn't even buy the digital download yet.
And I kind of knew it was coming. Like, I went into the theater kind of knowing he was going to die. Like, no one told me. I just sensed
it on the popcorn person.
I kind of did. I don't know why. But I knew he was going to kick it. And I'm just sitting there like, I was so mad. Like, he didn't deserve it.
This is, I'm going to turn back to this being another inherently Star Wars problem. So I'm going to say that Snoke is, at this point, because he's dead, not a kind of fully developed or fleshed out character. But I'm going to turn around and tell you that at the end of the original trilogy, the Emperor wasn't either.
1,000 times yes.
All right.
But we have,
well, I guess Al wants to say something since he's fuming.
A bajillion things that we've added to it.
Let him speak before he chokes you.
Okay.
Force chokes.
I have heard the argument of, but we didn't even know about the Emperor a lot, I'm sure. But Star Wars built up the Emperor in the background of every single film till you saw him in the third one. And at that point, he was a presence. Snoke shows up, movie one, Force Awakens. We see him, you see his face. There is a story to that face. You look at it, there's something there. You didn't have an ending that you had to make up time for to explain how he did half the things that he did.
All right. So, yeah, another point of contention is whether or not Snoke was developed enough as a character. I've heard also the argument of like, well, he's the Emperor. And once again, we're dealing with whether or not this film is doing justice to the original trilogy, whether it's honoring the plot points of the saga, whether it actually is a return of the Jedi again with the Emperor being killed off and the villain. Like, it's return of the Jedi if Vader doesn't die killing the Emperor. Instead, he goes, so anyways, Luke, like I was saying, would you rule the galaxy with me?
Father and son, come on, let's do this.
His suit was better insulated. That's all the difference. That's interesting. But we will discuss that towards the end of the podcast about whether or not this is, having our cake and eating it too.
Can I transition us on to Luke? Because I feel like Luke's story is inherently important. We're talking about Kylo Ren. We're talking about Rey. We're talking about Snoke. It all stems from a really big reveal in Luke's story.
Yeah.
So when we find Luke, he's, a hermit on this island, but we find out that it's because of... Well, so there's a technical term for the part of storytelling they did here called the Rashomon effect.
There's a technical term for this kind of storytelling. It's called the Rashomon effect. You just refer to it as a Rashomon effect. All geeks.
The Rashomon effect being the idea that we saw this flashback of Luke's moment of weakness from a couple of different perspectives, from a certain point of view, Star Wars. And that's kind of what gives us Ben. But I think the inherent problem that I'm still wrestling with is the Luke Skywalker we know capable of that moment of weakness.
I love there was a Rashomon effect in the film. I love that. And I like the idea of it being the passion. That one of the things that turned Ben was this moment. But this moment happened because Ben was dark. So Ben is dark because of this moment. This moment happened because Ben is dark. There is a missing piece in there, and I don't think it's a narrative missing piece. I don't want to hear that Snoke was manipulating Luke or something like that. I'm saying narratively, this was a classic example. This is my biggest problem with the film, I think, is a classic example of tell, don't show. That's what they were doing. They told us, Luke told us, literally with voiceover, I looked at this young boy and saw darkness rising in him, and then I thought about it with the lightsaber in my hand. This time I'm acting like I'm conflicted about it, even though I just drew a blade. later on, I got Joker eyes. But like, for me, that was my issue with it. I really appreciate where they were going. Once again, I'm not sure if the journey was done well, in my opinion.
Plus, he tries to play it off as this fleeting thought, and the movie itself tries to play it off as a fleeting thought. It wasn't. I'm sorry. You had three physical motions that you had to go through of picking up lightsaber, turning lightsaber on. Like, there was like a number of things that you had to do to get to from point A to point B, and then to say, like, it was a fleeting example. I'm sure it was, Luke. Yeah, all right. Fleeting.
If the prosecuting attorney will, no.
And I think that's it. I think the people who enjoyed the film and enjoyed Luke's characterization in the film are forgiving of how it played out simply because narratively it was beautiful. Like, I like that tension of why Ben turned, but I just feel like it's sort of like, hey, this is a good idea for a scene. Maybe not their best filming.
I definitely don't hate Luke's characterization in the film. I'm mixed on it. I think what's so difficult is it is really the crux of this narrative.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So the fact that I'm still mixed on this one little piece, it hurts the interpretation of the film overall.
And I absolutely love, although I don't have confirmation on it, that this was the thing that Mark Hamill had issue with. Because I heard a little bit of rumor. Mark Hamill had issue with one particular thing in the script, and it was something to do with what Luke's motivation was. And if this is it, I mean, God bless you. You really are the guardian of this saga that's important to a lot of people. But again, and we'll discuss this by the end of the podcast, there are those who believe that certain things in the past must die.
I'm with you guys once again. I want to say I agree that I like his characterization where he's at in the movie. And I'm not even a problem with what he might have done. But I will say it was poorly handled. And you know what else would have really helped with guiding us into figuring out where Ben's thoughts were at this moment? Giving any semblance of characterization and knowledge of his relationship with Snoke. I'm sorry, but oh my god. Like, did you have to throw him into the back of the movie van of the...
We're going to allow this in, this madness in, even though I disagree entirely. Very much. I think he found Snoke afterwards, but that's fine. I appreciate that you stuck to your ridiculously insane guns.
I think we're coming too easy to the third point being the truth, though. Because if the third point's the truth, then, like, we all still have a problem with it. But if Ben's side of the story is really what's still true, why do we believe Luke? He's, like, edging towards what Ben said. And you're like, no, that's it. That's got to be it because that's what Luke said.
I mean, I think the most interesting part is it really doesn't matter at this point who was right or who was wrong. Like, it all led to the same thing.
A good point, yeah.
The perspectives were drawn from this scene. Whatever the reasoning was, this event happened and this caused the fallout from it, which I think is pretty interesting. And it's very Star Wars from a certain point of view. How you look at things changes how you act.
If we're going to stay on Luke, I'd love to talk about two other scenes with Luke. One scene that I really thought I was going to hate, but ended up really loving. And that was the reappearance of Yoda to talk to Luke.
I think that was probably the perfect use. There are two perfect scenes in my head in this movie in terms of nostalgia, and this is why you want to use the original characters. One was having like impish puppet Yoda
100%
teaching Luke what it means to use the Force and to be a Jedi. Again, I thought that was an excellent scene.
And the other was I changed my hair?
What I thought was very touching was Luke with R2-D2 and saying there's nothing that would get me off this planet, and the force projection. Well, not the force projection.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Exactly. That's what made me cry.
That, me too. Yeah, it was very touching. It was wonderful, and it's one of the things that you're like, thank you very much for doing this for us. It's like, this is what I really enjoyed.
I really, again, I'm with Frank. That was one of the perfect scenes in the film, is Yoda on the thing with Luke, and Luke's like, I'm going to burn this mother down. And Yoda's like, nah, I'll do it for you. I'll do it. And it's again, I like that theme in the film of just like, let it die. Like, and
two old men burning the history.
Yeah. And it's like, but the ancient texts. And Yoda's like, yes, have you read them?
Yeah,
exactly. That was a great line because it's like, it doesn't matter. These ancient texts about all this stuff, like, we'll build again. We'll build it. If we were corrupt before, then the new generation will know what's best and build from there.
Tie that into the theme of the film in regards to letting it burn and dealing with the legacy of Star Wars.
All those EU books were real page turners.
Let them burn.
And the Jedi failed.
Mm. Sure. Yeah. I think the EU books letting them burn. yeah.
That's better.
Yeah. But I think there was a huge point of contention with that scene, though, because they were like, well, how come a Force ghost could summon lightning? Why can't we get the ghosts to do that to our enemies?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Force doesn't work that way.
I honestly could not be made to care.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting. Luke's problem with his faith is really telling, and it's also maybe his problem with his role in the legacy, both like in and out of fiction, like how important the Skywalkers are in terms of the greater scope of the universe. And we will bring this up again at the end of the podcast. So Luke and Rey, and specifically Rey's role as, I'm not going to say the new chosen one, but the new focal character, one of many focal characters. I think this movie has more protagonists than any other Star Wars movie. Rey, what do you think about her?
Rey's really cool. I liked her appearance in The Force Awakens. I think this film definitely did a really nice job of establishing who she is or what direction she's going to and what her role is now in this new trilogy.
Matt, what do you think her role is in the new trilogy?
She's supposed to be the person to rally behind. She might not be the main character because, like, as this movie showed, everybody was a lot of people are important in their own right. Pretty much mostly everybody is connected to her in some way, whether either they like are friends with her or they just believe in her or believe in what she can do. I think she's somebody that she might not be always the focal point, but she'll definitely be the center.
One of my favorite lines of the film, and I guess maybe just because it resonates with me so personally, is when Luke looks at Rey and asks, what are you doing here? And she goes, I just want to know my place in all this. Mm-hmm. You know, and while I think it is part of the larger narrative and saying that, well, Rey's place in this is like the rest of us because she's a nobody, quote unquote. It's just, I like the idea of Rey and I like what she goes through and I like that she doesn't have to be important or special to be powerful and awesome.
I like Rey as a character. I liked her from Force Awakens onward. As far as what place she has in here, I think Luke covers the Beacon of Hope thing and I think she's just going to add to that mythos and much as any other character who's still alive and not part of the legacy can be. And I'm okay with that. I think that's where she should be.
I get that she's the new focal point for the rebellion or whatever. That's the purpose that she's going to serve. But I don't get a sense of who Rey is. I don't get a sense of what her personal goals are. I mean, if it was to find out who she was and what her place was, she got her answer in this, and now what?
I think now what is the big question. Once you find out that there maybe isn't a great destiny, not everybody's going to get a letter from Hogwarts, even though they have magical powers. This is a very confusing analogy. So, like, even though not everybody is a Skywalker, maybe everybody has a role to play, but she has to find what hers is. And I love that we don't know where it is. Like, there's a chance she has darkness in her, obviously, and that's not just sort of a underlining thing just to make her character more cool. I think Rey and Ren, Kylo and Rey, are interesting in how they play off each other, and that was really well established, really well done in this movie with
incredible
with Force Book Messenger and all the you really get the idea of two young impressionable people who are trying to figure out who they are in an incredibly distant and distancing galaxy. they don't know who they are in this big saga, and we're gonna find out, or they're gonna make it up.
I think Kylo definitely figured out who he was at the end of this film.
By the end of this film, he thinks he does, yes. I feel there's still doubt there, whether he'll admit it or not, but he is supreme leader.
I think there was enough stuff at the end of that, in his confrontation with Luke, that is going to spark internal conflict. It's like he's positive that he's the supreme leader and he's going to take it over, but he was not prepared for the way Luke confronted him.
Yeah.
Speaking of the way Luke confronted him, I love how expanded the Force powers became in this movie. I love, like it seemed like a more localized thing before, and now it's like literally they're jumping across the galaxy what things can do.
Oh, yeah, thank God for that. That was something I felt during the prequels all the time was, oh, I've reached level 372 of Jedi. Now I can use Force Lightning. And we got into something really awesome now.
I really liked how the climax of Luke taking the stand against the First Order was essentially a big galaxy-spanning Jedi mind trick. I thought that was absolutely perfect. This fit Luke a lot better than some kind of big fight, just using the Force to deceive but also teach.
Yes, yes, he was a teacher in that moment. He was, and most importantly, what he really did, what he was really there for, yeah, delays, yeah, lots of other things, but what he really was there for is to say, I'm sorry, Ben. Because it was, in some way, it was still his fault. He was the master who failed his student. And I think that's amazing. I love how it ties in with the holograms, the Princess Leia thing, as if it reminded him of a way. I love how he actually never left the island like he said he wouldn't.
I think that may be the single greatest piece of character development across the gap between the original trilogy and this trilogy, is seeing the way that Luke evolved. Because the Luke that we saw in Return of the Jedi would have had that confrontation with Kylo. He would have physically gone there and they would have had the battle.
Mm-hmm. And he may have at the end forgiven him or loved him and even tried to redeem him with that, but there would
have
been
might have been his undoing. But this was the Luke that had grown and seen the bigger picture.
And it was also really nice because it took that kill away from Ben. All this anger and all this thing, like, I want to get you for this. I want to get you for what you did to me and what you're responsible for all my terrible choices, Dad. It was going up there and showing that projection is like, no, you don't get to have this.
Failure.
It was another failure point for a main character in the film.
It's, I don't think it's, you don't deserve this. I think it's, you deserve not to kill me. It's like, there is good in you, and I'm not letting you take another step down the dark side.
Right.
By killing me.
Right. Absolutely. The worst thing we saw Kylo Ren do is kill his father.
Yeah.
We saw in this film him resist the urge to kill his mother, and he wasn't given the chance to kill Luke.
This is the time he got propped up by his mentor, finally.
And I do feel like, like with everything else in this scene, it was very powerful, very passionate, and it ends in a very dramatic way that is bittersweet, in many ways bitter. I mean, let's not ignore the bitter and the bittersweet, with seeing Luke face his final sunrises. And it is, there was a lot of emotional baggage in there, a lot of tension that it's hard to know whether the film did it or whether just years of nostalgia do it for you. Although I've spoken to people who've seen the movie with me who have not had those years of nostalgia, and it didn't matter as much for them that this happened. It was just sort of an interesting thing, maybe similar to what we thought when Obi-Wan passed away. So another link to the original trilogy, and we're now at the end of the podcast. So one thing that has kept coming up throughout our discussion is how often this film is putting a brave new face on Star Wars, and then almost immediately someone will explain something and say, it's just like the original movies. Which the hell is it? I'm not saying it has to be absolutely both, but I think there is some tension there, and that's what's causing some of the conflict you hear about online. Specifically for me, I'm saying that I like this film. I like the passion and the story that was brought out by bringing up these original characters, but it redefined what happened in that original trilogy. It took away the fairy tale that was the original story. It's a fantasy story. It is of good and evil and fathers and sons and only one family meaning anything to the universe. That was Star Wars for three movies and many, many decades. And yeah, I get it. There's a lot of expanding universe stuff and what have you. There are the prequels and what have you. And maybe that's what it comes down to, a generational thing. But for me, just bringing the original characters back so you can off one per movie feels hollow. Just bringing these characters back so that you could take away their narrative arc and use it as back filler for new characters that may not even get the background you think they're going to get is problematic.
I feel like that was a realization I came to the minute Disney announced that they were going to make more movies.
100%. I agree.
The minute they were going to make sequels to this...
This is how you do it.
This is appropriate and proper storytelling to a certain extent.
Well, this is how you do it, is what I would say. Yeah.
You know, like, you're not going to have a direct sequel where we follow around 60-year-old Luke.
Obviously,
right?
Yeah.
So I guess that's something I just had to come to terms with the minute Disney said they were going to do it. I just don't see any other way around it. Their happy endings were going to be taken away from us.
I do. You said it 100 years in the future. Effectively, arguably... Where Disney wants to take Star Wars is that, where they're not going to be slaves to the original canon. They could do new brave things. They could do a war movie. They could do a different kind of movie here and there. They don't have to connect with the entire legacy that has been built. They could pick and choose what to canonize in their backlog. That's what Disney wants. One way of doing it would be to disassociate it with the original trilogy by not having the original characters put in. The reason they bring them in, obviously, one of the best reasons would be nostalgia factor. You want to... engage Star Wars fans and tell them this is their Star Wars. So it works. Force Awakens for me worked because it felt so familiar, which is something that Matt earlier in the episode like rallied against. The elements that feel familiar in this movie are joyous to me. It's a weird, they want to have their cake and eat it too. And as an audience member, I want to have my cake and eat it too. I want to be like, oh, I remember all this. But at the same time saying, don't mess with all that.
I think there's definitely a way you can bring all these characters in and not necessarily, as James said, take away their happy ending. They're in it. They're just not necessarily focal points. Like, we meet Han, and it's like, oh, hey, Han. And he's around. He gets them from point A to point B, and then buggers off. It's fine. We don't need... Like, that can be in a movie, and it's okay. We continue to see where they're at in their lives. This one's not really about them, but we get to meet them and say, oh, hey, Luke, how you doing? And then we move on.
It's interesting, and I'm sure there'd be some people who would not be happy with that.
I disagree with the premise. I don't think we're taking away the happy ending. I don't think we're taking away the fairy tale. I think what we're getting is an actual ending to their story. The happy ending, when you're all done in your early 20s, and then nothing happens...
I'm going to interrupt. I disagree. I absolutely disagree. I don't want to just be said, no, that's not what's happening. That is absolutely what's happening. It's a fairy tale that ends with the prince and the princess kissing and getting married. Those fairy tales don't follow them until they die of old age. Three generations out. We got to see whether your grandkids have lupus. If it's not that, it's not a real ending. I'm saying that the original trilogy was a fairy tale and that was their fairy tale ending. You're saying that you don't need the fairy tale. Or that wasn't, you're fine with it not being a fairy tale. That's what you're saying.
So I think... A lot of people talk about this film being super subversive, and maybe this is from a film creator standpoint, but I've been following, obviously, a lot of the coverage and talks with Rian Johnson. I think it's important to know, I guess, that, you know, he didn't set out to make a film that subverts all of Star Wars' expectations. He says he sets out to make a film that creates drama. And unfortunately, sometimes creating that drama, he took characters and pitted them against each other. I mean, there were tons of different versions of this film, right? There was an original version of this film where Poe and Finn went off to Canto Bight. And when then DJ wasn't actually DJ, there was a possibility he was going to be Lando. And, you know, all these other options. But this is the film we got.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to say that it's both inherently Star Wars and inherently not Star Wars. Star Wars has meant so many things to so many different people. One of the things that annoyed me, like, oddly in this movie was when Maz Kanteen sends them off to Canto Bight, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's... You want to know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of a video game mission. It reminds me of the cutscene cinematic I got in a Star Wars video game that sends me off to do my thing, to come back and do my journey, which is a huge Star Wars experience for me, and yet I didn't like that. You know what I mean? So I think that's inherently interesting about Star Wars, right? I think, like, that in and of itself is Star Wars.
That Star Wars is different for different people?
Yeah.
That's true. Whether or not it's what's good about Star Wars or interesting is not really a question, but that's absolutely true.
But I think there was something that always was magical about the fairy tale in space, and I think that sort of was what Star Wars was. Even in the expanded universe, even in with the video games and so many of these other things, always there was this air, arguably in the prequels, something about the fairy tale in space. And I feel like, yes, that's still present here to a certain extent.
And I feel like this is definitely like a Star Wars movie. Like, as much as Rian Johnson wanted to break away from the Star Wars movie and make it like nothing you've ever seen before, this is a Star Wars movie. The Millennium Falcon coming in and, you know, helping save the day. Luke deciding at the end to not fight in a way to fight. There are so many things here that play back to old Star Wars movies. This is 100% a Star Wars movie.
It's still a Star Wars story. It reminded me of Knights of the Old Republic 2, where back then people said it was a slap in the face of Star Wars. That the developers said F you to George Lucas. But like, if you take a look into it, it still was the Lucas vision of Star Wars for, and I still think this is how it is with The Last Jedi. Yes, there are subversions and there are things that seem different, but I think if you go past the surface changes, it's all still part of this. It's all the same feel to it all.
I left the film thinking, I enjoy this, I know why they had to do this, or else they're never going to be doing what Disney wants to do, which is making Star Wars forever. This is the best way of doing that. I get it, but for the first time in my life, I felt like the original trilogy is something different in my mind. It's just different. It's almost as if I'm watching Star Wars fanfic. And I know that's one of the things that people have said, like, noxiously forever. I don't actually mean it as a bad thing. I liked it because it was good Star Wars fanfic. I was like, this is enjoyable. To me, Han and Leia are going to be together. That movie ended. There was no special editions. I'm not saying it like as an angry thing. I'm just sort of saying it like it really doesn't feel related. And I'm not sure how much any of this new stuff fits in to the saga we all know and love. So think back to this scene. Puppet Yoda uses the Force to conjure a lightning bolt that destroys the Jedi temple tree and burns down all the Jedi texts. And if you didn't realize it at the time, you may have found out about this later on the internet, somebody rescued those Jedi texts. They were in the Falcon when they were escaping. You could see it very briefly towards the end. That someone was probably Rey, but it doesn't matter. This is what Yoda says to Luke when Luke is shocked that he burned all the Jedi texts. Yoda says, "Oh, read them, have you? Page turners, they are not." There's a specific thing where he says there's nothing in those texts that Rey doesn't already have.
Huh.
So I'm putting this one forward. As much as this film destroys the original trilogy, it distances itself, so it brings you a whole new Star Wars, the things that we've all discussed. So we kind of all kind of landed on the, it's a bit of both. In reality, it was not The Last Jedi. Even the title of the movie was a misdirection. There is still the Jedi. The Jedi text still exists. The magic of the franchise is still up in the air. We don't know where it's going. We don't know what the future holds. And Yoda literally told us that, I think. That scene to me carries a lot of weight. All right, now's the time where we're going to go around the table, do some roses and thorns, things we liked, the things we didn't like, if, rapid fire, just anything you want to come up with.
I love porgs.
I love porgs!
Porgs are great.
Oop. They're delicious.
Super interesting production note about porgs. They had a native puffin population on the island.
That they wiped out.
That they couldn't get rid of. So literally, some of those shots of porgs are just, they're just digital porgs in front of puffins.
Well, we could have ended on that one. I love the throne room fight.
Oh my god.
So good.
That was so good.
Headcanon. The students that Ben took away from Luke when he went, when he ran away from his murderous uncle, were actually the throne room guards. That's why they were sort of force sensitive. They're kind of trained, but not really. That's what I think they are. Either that or Knights of Ren, I guess. I don't know.
Oh gosh! And those weapons that they were using—the like the swords that broke apart.
Like the Soul Calibur whip.
Oh my gosh! Yes. This movie just it in better than The Force Awakens. It had a whole bunch of things where it's like, I want that. You know, like I didn't see myself buying any of the toys from The Force Awakens, but boy, do I want a lot of toys from The Last Jedi.
Oh god! Don't get into Black Series. Anyway,
I very much enjoyed the bombers. How the bombers worked in space. I know a lot of people were upset about that, but I like they explained it with magnets. Yeah, right? Say,
canon explanation is magnets.
Yeah,
magnets.
That's how they work.
Magnets like, are how they
two
work.
Two kinds of magnets, though. They're pushed out by like a railgun magnet system, and then the bombs themselves have magnets to stick on metal things.
Really, I love the space battles. I thought the opening scene was great. I thought the throwback to the Battle of Hoth at the end, that was really cool. I love the effect with the salt, the turning everything red.
Very small detail. If you can pause the DVDs when you get them, on some of the bombs are written little messages like in World War II, including "Hi Snoke" and "Han says hi."
Oh, nice.
I gotta say, I really, really like Kylo Ren in this movie, and that's a big up for me because I hated him in Force Awakens. Nice. I thought he was a garbage villain. I did. I thought when he had Rey over the like the crevice and was like the lightsaber was dueling, him screaming and was like, like join the dark side was akin to I want to show you my collectibles. They're so cool. Like, and he completely 180'd in this movie. Was a threatening force and was just like, I was like, all right, wow, redeemed. You're a villain.
I'm very mixed about the humor and the thing, but for Rey and Ren and the, can you put a shirt on? I don't know. I feel like a lot of the humor did undercut some, that's my thorn on that, is that I think a lot of the humor did undercut dramatic scenes.
I agree with your point about the humor feeling out of place at times. Tone-wise, I thought it was weird, but I loved that first sequence with Poe and Hux.
That was good.
And the holding for General Hux.
Yeah.
I thought that was it somehow anytime Poe starts talking, it doesn't feel like it's Star Wars dialogue.
No.
He feels like he's somehow out of the universe. He's from
like
our
he's
universe.
He's a role player who somehow found
yeah,
his way.
And he's just not really playing the role. He's interjecting his own things. I love it though.
For me, my favorite battle other than the throne room battle has got to be Luke facing off with Kylo Ren.
Oh yeah, that was really cool.
And I just, particularly for me, because like Luke was obviously my favorite hero of the original trilogy, and seeing him like fight Vader and all that sort of stuff was amazing, but I'm in a different place in my life now, and I just feel like the battle Luke has with Kylo is just, it speaks to me as an older person, you know, like mm-hmm. someone, you know, not
someone
old.
Someone who's horrible to his nephew.
Someone who can say, screw you, kid, I know better.
I'll repeat again, I really liked Rose as a new character. I thought she was a great addition. And I also really liked the conclusion to her infant storyline with the slave kids.
The broom scene.
The broom scene. I think it really shows that you can get success out of failure. I do honestly believe that their storyline, in universe-wise, was the most important event to happen because they're keeping their resistance alive. Just the fact, like, the kids viewing their actions and them spreading the story of how the resistance still has heroes. Right now, when the resistance is, like, confined to the Falcon, this is when we start getting the allies. This is when we see the spark of rebellion light again.
And yeah, that spark, which very subtly, and hopefully will not come back as a promised child, showed a slave child, again, a little bit of a nod. The two moons, a little bit of a nod. Force pulling the broom and then rising it up like it's a saber. Beautiful scene. I don't know what you guys thought, but that was it.
Everything
was
I wanted when he was his age.
Yeah. Oh, God, age. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That actor probably isn't old enough to actually care.
Son of a... Probably not.
Hi, I'm Poe. Oh, hi, I'm Rey. Oh, I know. Like, you could have made that a little less awkward since we have that spark and that hope for the end of the movie.
Okay, one thing that I was kind of down on, I thought Phasma was criminally underused again.
Yeah, oh, yes, absolutely. But my, if I could add a rose onto that thorn, I'm going to say, you've always been scum. Nod. Rebel scum.
That was a very good line.
Very good line.
The Finn Phasma fight looked beautiful with all the burning and the...
Yeah.
Love the throwback to the last movie where he pulls out the electric thingy that the stormtrooper
the stun
used.
Guard thing. Yeah. Very cool.
I really liked pretty much all of the humor with like aliens where you don't know what they're saying, but you can tell what their feelings are, what they're saying. Kind of like the physical humor with BB-8 crashing into walls because he has a trash can over his head.
I loved Haldo light speeding into the destroyer.
That was amazing.
I don't care.
Amazing.
I don't
scene.
Care if we're going to have to spend 20 years explaining it to a bunch of people of why the physics of that won't work any other time, but it looked so cool. It was so amazing. It was just incredible.
The decision not to use any sound, to just have that
silence. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh yeah. My God. Just leave us sitting there with that moment.
You know what would gorgeous. Be, my mouth was
would be
wide.
Awesome if in the next Star Wars movie that's all they use against each other is light jumps into each other's vessels.
That's and a very dark decision. Yeah, all the suicide.
Imagine
bombers.
The fans who had problems with that scene because of why not always use it. Imagine them going, I guess we got our answer.
I have a very unusual like that no one else seems to. I'm a big fan of Hux. I'm a huge fan of Hux. Yeah.
I just love that actor in general.
No,
he's
like,
amazing.
I just, I love the like the weird screaming villain that he is. I love that he's like just this like
grabbing his holster when he sees
Kylo. He's like, I should kill this guy, and he's waking up. Damn it! I'm like, no, Hux, you should be in charge. You're better at this than he is.
Of all the insane staring into the camera and actually saying original trilogies ain't that eat crap, drinking the green, blue-green milk from that thing. I don't know where I'm landing on that. That's a thorn and a rose. That was, like, cool, and also, like, all right, man, I get it. You don't want me to watch your movie. Shut up.
One of my favorite stage scenes is Rey and Kylo Ren, their hands just touching, as Luke screams, no, don't, and the building just disassembles around them. I thought looked incredible, and it was just such a crux on that moment. And, you know, like...
It was beautiful. Yeah, it was really cool.
It just worked and so well.
Played in with the two Rashomon flashbacks.
BB-8 AT-ST. Love, love, love.
That was crazy. That actually scared me a little. I was like, I don't know about this.
I thought it was Benicio del Toro at first. And I was like, oh, yeah. Woo.
Yeah. I like Del Toro's character. I feel like he's a conflicted, kind of bad, gray guy. I think it was interesting.
Del Toro's character is the type of person I'm excited to see in all the extra stuff outside of the movies.
Yeah. He's getting like so many comics and probably video game appearances. It's probably not even funny.
Oh, yeah. God. He's Boba Fett that deserves it. He actually does something in the film that's like, all right, I get it.
Thorn, for me, I just could not get behind them riding on the backs of those monsters. It's like a five-minute sequence. I went to the bathroom my second time around. Right at that point, came back. Right as DJ rescued them, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with James on that as far as the Thorn, but I did like them running through the casino, though. That part was kind of cool. I enjoyed all the effects and things that went on through that, and the little guy getting all his coins back.
That was a BB-8 getting used as a coin machine was hilarious.
Thorn, I did not like the black BB-8.
BB Evil? Yeah. No. Didn't do enough.
So I have a problem with this, like, on a Star Wars level. Disney, can we stop advertising completely minor characters as huge products and toys?
Captain Phasma, BB-8, everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Dark question to pose to everyone, not quite a rose or a thorn, but why did C-3PO get left behind to pilot the ship? Because everybody seems to hate 3PO in these movies.
Except
now.
Luke.
He winked at him.
I want you to take one moment.
That's all he got was a wink.
One moment. Put yourself in the shoes of anybody in a command decision here.
I see where you go with this.
And ask if you would trust C-3PO to follow through on that plan. Never in a million years.
My teary-eyed moment was when Luke and Leia meet on screen and Luke says, nobody's ever really gone. It was obviously foreshadowing to Luke's passing in the movie, but it takes on an entirely different context now.
Yeah. It was a film. There was stuff in there. There's stuff to dissect and discuss forever. I've been, believe it or not, as much as some of you want to kill me right now, I've held back on some of the things I want to say about what this means for the franchise. As much as some of us are celebrating the, let it die. You're quoting Kylo Ren. That's Star Wars. Disney's Star Wars motivation is like, kill the past. If that's kind of weird in a way. Of course, it's just one movie. I'm sure there's Han Solo's story is going to be tight. But it's interesting. And it's a film. It is a film that we can discuss.
I mean, just because I haven't gotten to say it yet in this thing, to follow up on the meta of that Let It Die, Rey in this story is the medium of that, right? Rey is new. She's not someone destined, but she has taken on the mantle of that destiny. Theoretically, Rey takes the books or has the books, so she's still going to be the traditional Jedi. There isn't a last Jedi. When Kylo Ren and Rey are in the throne room, Kylo Ren is like, let it die, and Rey's all like, no, the rebels. Like, this is the part we want to keep, you know? So I just, that's her point in the meta of this story, is she is that medium. She continues that kind of viewer perspective, or that supposed viewer perspective given to her in The Force Awakens.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Al.
Counterpoint, nope.
We're not doing that. This is it's a pretty in-depth story. We could probably discuss this for another 2.5 hours, and we won't, so you're welcome.
No, we're not.
But if you want to hear more about this or keep arguing about it, why don't you follow non-productive.com on all your favorite social media accounts? Join our fan club, where we literally spent hours discussing this instead of working in our paying jobs. And yeah, may the Force be with you.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.
Anybody wonder why I said that Ray's parentage sucked and then later on said, no, it was great.
Yes.
Nobody was saying anything. Care. So I was like, I'm going to piss people off and see if it gets a reaction. It worked.
It did.
You people went up and you took the bait. You're like, no, no. I just have to cut out the part where I said it. It just seems like you're angry for
me. I went a completely different way. It's like, oh, well, Frey's going to accept. Like, let me say something I absolutely despise. Like,
yeah, I don't think there's any place to use this in here. But just in case and get it on tape, I'd like to point out that I think that this movie stayed true to the real core philosophy of Star Wars, which is how many Kurosawa films can I cram into this spaceship?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
All right. Yeah, good point.